It is Sunday the 6th of November, and this is episode 98 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome along. I am Chris, and I am joined today by Ian. Hello, Ian.
I am Ian. Hello.
And we've got a fair bit to get through. The tech world has not stopped since we last did our podcast. So let's get going. And let's start the news. Sorry. I don't know.
Did you just fart? There was a...
No, it's just, you know, never mind. Let's start with Nokia. They've announced their Windows phone, the first real Windows phone, apparently, according to Nokia. Supposedly the products that are going to save them from the dustbin.
Save the world.
And obviously save the world at the same time. But two products have been announced, the Lumia 800 and the Lumia 710.
It's actually Lumia. I don't know where you get the N from, but never mind.
I said Lumia.
Did you? I thought you said Lumina.
Oh, maybe I did.
Hey.
Whatever. Lumia. None of them, then, they look all right, don't they? One of them looks a little bit like an iPod Nano with a phone stuck in the middle of it.
I thought the 800 looked lovely, I must admit. Design-wise, I think it looked very good. Quite minimal. Looked really good.
And unique, for sure. But it does look like an iPod Nano with a phone stuffed in the middle of it. The specs of this phone doesn't particularly set anything on fire. It's a single core processor, for example. You know, not got that much RAM, and it's got a nice camera phone.
But no front facing. You know, so it almost feels like a generation. I think design wise, the phone looks good, but the tech specs all feel a generation behind.
Yeah, but then again, we get a bit hung up on the tech specs, and what it should really be about is what it feels like to use. But then again, you have to say that there's plenty of Microsoft phones out there that are better specced and will feel exactly the same to use because the operating system is the same. So it's hard to know where they're coming from with it, really. They haven't decided to push the boundaries with specs. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think this is going to save them?
No. It's out this month. You know, so I guess we'll see sales. Well, we probably won't see sales because when Windows Phone 7 came out and the new devices came out, the one thing that they didn't reveal was how many they sold.
And actually, I don't think they should either. I think they should just keep that away. We don't need to know that kind of stuff.
We've sold three!
The thing is, from people I've listened to that have used Windows Phone 7, they say they really like it. And I've never used it. This is, hands in the air. I don't know what it's like to use. But the problem is that I'm the kind of buyer that would potentially buy one, and I won't, because, Android is my last purchasing decision, and probably my next one will go back to an iPhone again. The chances of me skipping into Microsoft's environment are pretty slim. So that's just the state of things, really. I think it's probably the same for lots.
And I think that's... Because they've been so long out the market, other people have got mindshare as well. Everybody knows Android, and obviously everybody knows iPhone.
People do know Android now, which is amazing, because we thought at one point that, how are they ever going to know it? But no, people know all about, it's an Android phone. And that's how they refer to it, not the Google phone, nothing like that. It's just, that's an Android phone. So yeah, I'm quite surprised how that has gained...
So am I.
It's a foothold.
And it's a good point. One of the chaps at work, it wasn't, I've got the new Samsung. It was, I've got the new Android. Mm. And that's how he referred to it.
So there's the 800, which is the sort of higher spec one, and then the 710, which is, again, lower spec, but roughly speaking, got the same hardware inside it. It's just a more basic production run, I guess. We'll see how it goes. I'm not holding out everything, but say I'd like to use one at one point just to sort of really gain an understanding of what it's like to use.
And I've used one for probably 10 minutes and it felt okay.
Yeah. There we go. That's the review.
Didn't change my world. Okay. Didn't blow my mind.
Just wanted to drop in there that the next Google phone, so the next officially sort of sanctioned Android phone, the Samsung Galaxy Nexus, has been announced for November 17th. And that's the first ice cream sandwich phone, and so the next installment of the Android operating system. So I'm hoping that at some point soon they will release an update for my Nexus S, which they said would be getting all the updates. So hopefully, fingers crossed, I get them.
Yeah,
I'll report back.
I'm just trying to find. I did have. Oh, there we go. I knew I had it. Oh, it's not available. How annoying. I'd saved a graphic, which was it was showing you all the different Android phones and what updated in length of time, and it was quite telling. But yes. Unfortunately, it's so telling that it's now disappeared.
it seems over time that with the Android phone, you can kind of expect that you're unlikely to get too many updates. You buy the handset and you live with that until the time you want to change your handset again. Another sort of, I think that's pretty much how it is. Android has now passed iOS as far as total app downloads go. So all those incredible figures about how many apps were being downloaded from Apple, Android has now overtaken that. Although they're still not monetizing quite as well.
No.
So, I mean, again, that's the big problem. They've got a lot of volume going on now because they've got that many handsets out in the wild, but they're still not turning that volume into cash as well.
Pretty much. I mean, I added this in, and it was almost pointing out the obvious, but I felt vindicated for us always saying Android is just going to dominate, and it really has. I mean, all the stats that are coming out is that worldwide and, you know, UK, and Android's definitely the biggest seller. It's got the biggest market share, but there still seems to be that issue for people spending money.
You know what? I think it's just because, for one thing, Apple, you seem to put an Apple logo on something and then it has a mystical effect of everyone likes to spend them more money than they would normally. And that's just, I don't know why that happens. It just does. But then the other one is that Android does still feel slightly more, I guess flaky is the word. It just feels a little bit more, you're open to dodgy apps and things like that. So
I was just going to say shit, but I better not.
it's funny. It's right on the verge of being, you know, very solid and reliable. But there's still something about it which has, you know.
Well, what a ringing endorsement that is. Mm. Chris says yes, it's right on the verge of being.
It's right on the verge of being solid. Great. it's like the Microsoft verdict of, yeah, it's okay.
I actually wondered, is it because the app stores are all a bit fragmented now? I don't know. I mean, is it harder for a developer to develop for all the different devices? I don't know if the Google tools, the Android tools, take care of developing for all the different screen sizes and all the different CPUs stuff.
They do. The operating system does take, the SDKs do allow that, but I'm sure it adds to the complications of doing so. Mm. You have to be able to cater for all these things. So you have to be thinking in a slightly different way, potentially.
I think it's also an easy decision. If we decided, let's quit our jobs, I'm going to set up a mobile app firm tomorrow. I think by default you would start to do iOS.
I think you'd be a bit silly not to concentrate there first, you know, with the view to expanding. But and that is what we see. You see it everywhere. You see coming to iOS, Android at some point in the future, and you see that everywhere. So that becomes a bit frustrating. But at some point, there will be a tipping point where, if you want to reach more users, you have to go with the Android.
Yes, platform. And I think it'll be the same as Windows and Macs right now.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And we're already starting to see, you know, Mac is taking much more of a front seat. The iOS 5 battery issues that, again, a small number, in inverted commas, of users have reported to Apple that they're having battery problems with their new iPhone 4S. And I think, it's iOS 5 in general, isn't it? And they've said they have identified a bug that is draining battery.
Yeah.
I don't know if that bug is called iCloud.
Well, it's really odd. I'd been running iOS 5 betas, and at the first betas came out, they were pretty bad, but it got better and better, and it seemed really solid, you know, battery life-wise. And I haven't noticed, I don't have a battery problem as such. I have noticed certain apps, but will, you know, leave like location checking on, you know, so the app should be shut down. It's almost like as if it's crashed, there's a bug and it's still running. And that drains very quickly because it's almost constantly saying, check, 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 check.
The new idea of location aware alerts and things like that apparently has left, constantly checking for your location. Obviously, it has to know your location in order to be able to tell you when you've left that location and when you're arriving at a new one.
There's a really interesting post that said iPhone 4s and 4s, there is whatever technology is in them, there's a small battery impact when it does this checking. I think it was on the OmniFocus blog. It went into great detail about how they have added on this location checking feature, but there could be 200 meters out depending on how fast you're traveling or how long you spend in a certain location. And the battery life is a small impact. But they did say that if you're using like a 3GS, the battery impact's massive. So there is something that they've done in the 4 and 4S hardware-wise that is slightly different.
I just think the amount of chattering that a modern phone does out, you know, all the time, and all the you know, the radios in there and all the things like that, it's going to take its toll.
It
even when, you know, the majority of your device is a battery, but, I mean, it's still going to take a toll.
I'm just going into, you went to location services and right down the bottom, there's a system services. And I looked in system services and one of the ones that's getting the blame is setting time zone. Now, I haven't travelled, well, fair enough, I've went 70 miles to walk up a hill yesterday. But in the last 24 hours, you know, I haven't been in anywhere near a time zone change. Yet setting time zone was active.
Mm.
And I'm like, what the hell? So I've turned that off. Just purely because I'm not going to be trapped. I guess if you're a traveler,
the thing is,
that's really handy.
Yeah, and I guess Apple's mantra is that, you know, don't leave this in the hands of the user. You know, it shouldn't be up to the user to have to go and do all that.
No,
it should be taken care of. I'm sure they will sort it out. They've said that they're going to release a software update that will fix the bugs and effects of battery life.
Yes,
whether that actually does it, yet to be seen.
Shaq got his new 4S, and the battery life is horrendous.
Mm.
He's not getting.
He must be quite disappointing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's. He's in a bit of a rage, but
and I've heard that consistently now from quite a few people who have it.
Yeah,
who said they're getting 3 hours or 4 hours out of it.
But it's bizarre because he had the 5 release on his iPhone 4, and it was fine, and he's got 5 in the 4S, and he's getting 4 or 5 hours, you know, which is it's half a day, and it's down at 5-6%.
The minimum a phone needs to be is 8 hours, so you can do a day away at work. Come back and there you go. It still works.
I still say more than eight. Eight would irritate me.
Eight probably would irritate, but it's a minimum.
Yeah.
You know, any less than that, you fail.
I like to think I can charge it in the morning, and I don't really need to charge it until maybe like lunchtime the next day.
Say, I've my phone. I forget about the battery. It's amazing. You know?
Cool.
Benefit. Yes, there was another point I was going to make. It was really important, clearly, because it's completely gone up my head. Anyway, let's go on. Siri doesn't understand you. Sorry, no. You've got no hope.
No.
I have enough trouble.
As we found out earlier on. For the first time in years, I had to slow down for Chris. And I don't know if I was really excited about something, but the bewilderment in your face was classic.
It was jawbone at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Trip me right up.
But yeah, Siri doesn't understand the Scots. And this did the rounds. I'm just going to the article just now. Oh, that's a video. I'll turn it off. There was an article in one of the Scottish papers, and some of the stuff they were actually asking it was fairly, you know, poor. It was like pretty rude, and it wasn't something you would be saying like day to day. One of the words was bobag. Now, I wouldn't expect Siri to understand bobag.
No. No, I don't think so. So no, but yeah, it does have trouble with the Scottish language. But you know,
I tried Shaq's. I tried it in the shop, and because of the background noise, it struggled. I tried Shaq's, and I think 2 out of 3 it worked okay. But there was one sentence I tried dictating, and I just, it could not get me. No matter how much I slowed down, I pronounced.
If you fed it a broad West Country accent or, you know, a proper Liverpudlian or, you know, Mankey, I think any very, very strong language, anything's going to struggle with it, aren't they, basically?
Pretty much.
I don't think it's fair just to pick out the Scottish language. There we go. Yes, just a quick point that they have, or hackers have, or a hacker has managed to port Siri onto iOS 4. Sorry, what am I talking about? They've ported it onto an iPhone 4 and also the iPod Touch, latest gen of that. So there isn't a hardware restriction and reason why they haven't put Siri onto the latest or the older handsets, which I guess was the case, and I guess that they were keeping it back just to sell the phones. But it's a little bit disappointing because it's a movement away from what they've always been about, which is software. You know, we'll update as much as we can, but now they're keeping software back as a feature itself, which I don't think that's in the spirit of things, to be honest.
No, and I mean, there's lots of people saying, "Oh, the microphone's better on the 4S, and it's got all sorts of things that makes it a better, you know, product." But I mean, the first kind of hacker that got this up and running, I think there was some sort of graphic library missing, so it was very slow to actually launch it. And also, there was a block at Apple's end, so there was something that they were.
Yes, they had to pretend that they were a 4S.
Yeah, so I think there was some sort of block that says, "Well, you know, you're from a 4, or you're not from a 4S, so you're getting blocked." But that's all been worked out. The graphic library's been ported over. And I think the only thing he said is he doesn't want to. He wasn't going to get involved he's done the proving of it. He's made his point, but he didn't want to then put it up in one of the.
Yeah, he said he's not interested in that side of things. He just wanted to get it up and running, and that's his fun.
He said
he was pretty sure that it will get put up there by someone.
Somebody will.
But that probably means that it's going to, next release of the handset, it'll probably get backported, I imagine.
It would be very disappointing if you could jailbreak your phone and get Siri. And, you know, you'd.
Yeah, again, the legit people sort of missing out almost.
Yes,
slightly disappointing. They may have their reasons for doing it, but say I think the biggest reason is just because it made the release of the 4S seem a little bit more exciting.
Yes.
Mobile Britain, it's all about the data.
Yeah, this. We've talked about stats. I usually do talk about stats. This was boggling. Three put up a blog post and 97% of all their traffic through their network is data. Only 3% is voice, which I just think is amazing.
Yeah. So it's a sign of the times, isn't it?
Absolutely amazing.
I mean, Three do sell themselves on the back of the fact that they are a data network.
And I think they're probably one of the most popular MiFi providers as well. You know, when you see people talking about MiFi devices, I see more people talking about my Three MiFi than I do Vodafone or whatever. They seem
because they're cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder how their network's holding up to all this, because they keep selling themselves on the back of it, and they're seeing an increase in data, and I wonder how far they can go before they think, oh crap.
And I mean, the other stat was since June last year and September this year, we've seen a 427% increase in data usage in Three for smartphone customers.
And how can they cope with that kind of? Because the bandwidth doesn't increase.
No.
They've got a certain amount of network coverage, and they've got a certain amount of that bandwidth, and so they're going to come up against the stoppers at some point.
But I must admit, I'm still using Three in the iPad, and it's working great. So
okay, yeah. See, now it's I decided I wasn't going to get a Three handset. I could have gone with Three. But I'm very happy I went with T-Mobile. Now they've done a good job, but Three, it's. You know, for it's probably a bit is it the what's it called, Sprint network in America? It's our kind of second. It's again judged a bit not one of the main players. It's excluded, for example, from all the talks that the main players have. I think they were moaning about it the other day, weren't they?
Always, in some ways, Three is like the Channel 5.
It's true. They've probably got a few more users than Channel 5, but yeah.
But you know what I mean. Yeah.
Yes, it's on the fringes of stuff. It's kind of there, but it doesn't get included. It's a bit left out, and you kind of don't even look at it in the channel guide.
No, it's like the plucky upstart. You know, that's good old Three.
But, you know, it takes time to turn people's, you know, ideas around, and if they keep selling cheap, they'll still sell, and then they've just got to keep up.
I wouldn't just go for Three on the iPad if it was purely in price. You know, I'm looking for performance, and I get it. And I know I'm a bit lucky in that they've got a good infrastructure, you know, and I'm in a big city, and maybe not as spread out as other ones. But for me, it's been really good.
There you go. and home data rates. So the amount of stuff we're consuming through our broadband at home is growing as well.
Yes. Average home broadband user downloads 17 gig of data each month, which...
That's a lot of data.
It's a lot, but in some ways I thought that was quite little. But then maybe we're odd.
But then that's that. You know, this is an average.
Yeah.
And you take, you know, my parents who used to, you know, sit on a 1 gig connection, you know, as in a limit of 1 gig or something, and happily sit within it. But even they're now starting, you know, watching iPlayer on their TV, catching up, doing all those other things that, you know, are now becoming mainstream.
Absolutely.
And they've got internet TV, for goodness sake. Ridiculous.
That still wrangles with you, doesn't it? There's still that little bit, it doesn't compute.
Bugs me. So yeah, so all these things, it's just, 17 gig, yeah, like you say, it probably does seem quite low, but it still does include the people that are just using email.
And I mean, 17 gigs, you mentioned iPlayer, but that's equivalent to 12 hours of HD content from iPlayer. So it shows you don't have to watch too much to actually start racking it up.
No, I hit some limits this month for the first time in ages.
Wow.
I got the kind of notifications I was up to my 50% usage, and I have no idea what I downloaded. I think that might be to do with iCloud, you know.
Well, I was going to say, is it all the iOS updates?
And those, I guess they're big. So, yeah,
so are you? Well. Do you pay for, are you on a limited amount a month?
Yeah, I can't remember what the limit is, but it's huge. It's something around 100 gig, so I don't know what it is. But so the fact that I'm getting up to 50 gig is, for me, is quite
yeah,
unusual.
And no surprise, Virgin also gave Guardian some stats that if you're on a 10 meg line, the average user was 19 gig a month. But those in 100 meg connections, were downloading 130 gig a month. And yeah, there's no big surprise at that.
No, not just because they can, because that's how much wider they think, but the people who buy 100 meg connections are internet users. They buy it for a reason.
They're pirates.
It's not surprising, but again, they're kind of telling us now that, we're actually starting to use the connections as they first advertise them, and then that's causing them a problem.
Yes.
And more of a problem going to be caused because Netflix is coming. Netflix is, you know, probably the biggest provider in America. It's got this bit that, like, our Love Film, I guess, the DVD rentals, and they also have a streaming service. And it's the streaming service that's coming over here early in 2012. Probably because they've just cocked up royally in America, alienated all their users by putting up their prices, and have lost nearly a million subscribers. So they're probably trying to recoup some of those.
But they also had a crazy kind of 2 months where they said, we're getting rid of our DVD business. And then they says, no, don't worry, we'll sell it off and we'll treat it as a separate business as well as changing the prices. And then 2 weeks later they says, that was a mistake as well, we'll bring it back in. And it's like, this just looks like a company in absolute turmoil.
Well, I think the point was they had to do something, because they couldn't get the licensing deals with the service that they already had.
Yeah.
And the industry started, you know, the entertainment industry started imposing silly restrictions, like you can't stream until X number of weeks after the DVD release, and you can't sell, you know, you can't rent the DVDs until X days, you know, desperately trying to keep hold of their old distribution networks effectively. So these changes and the changes, the fact that their streaming service, they had to remove a whole ton of stuff, I think, if I understood it all right.
And they
effectively changed their pricing structure, which meant that for, I think it was like 80% of the users, that their price went up without option or choice, for, you know, a lesser service almost. So they peed off a whole lot of people, and people walked, and I think that shocked them. So they're now desperately trying to figure out how they can rescue it. And I mean, they're still the biggest thing. They're still huge.
They're still huge. I mean, I don't know if I put it in there was another crazy stat that they were responsible for something like 40 or 60% of all internet traffic in America was Netflix.
Yeah, that's how huge. I mean, they're obviously data heavy, but that's because they're data heavy and they've got that many subscribers.
I mean, it was just one of these crazy, crazy, boggling figures, which I'll probably never find.
No, probably. But in typical American style, they've just lost 37% on their shares purely because, you know, they've pissed off that many people. But I think they had to do it, and so they've kind of bitten the bullet and done it. And now they're coming over here as well.
32% of peak internet traffic is just Netflix in America.
I wonder what that is for iPlayer in the UK.
Yeah.
Wonder.
But the two key things, there's no idea in range and no idea in price. Because it's something that's always hurt. Anyway, and I guess we see it more with things like iTunes. I guess Amazon as well, we're seeing it now. We've got deals in America, but they don't have the deals here.
Yeah, no saying whether they're going to come to, because it's a big thing on Xbox over in America. And, you know, Netflix, wherever we see Love Film and things like that added, is where they add their Netflix. So we don't know whether that's all coming. Obviously, it affects things like Sky on our Xboxes as well. So whether they've, you know, they've probably got exclusive deals, so that we probably won't see it too soon. Mm. But these things all live and die by where you can get them and where they're available, because they become much more useful then. But easy come one, easy go another, Seesaw, which I'm sure everyone remembers.
I remember talking about it just like it was episode 41.
There we go. It's dead.
Yeah.
It's lived and died within the scale of our internet podcasts. But yeah, so this was a service that streamed all of the major channels, basically, UK channels. So we had BBC One, 4 and 5, as well as some exclusive content in there. And you could stream, but it had adverts in it, even in the BBC content, which was criminal. But you could pay to have those adverts removed. they are no more. No, not enough people were interested.
And I think we said at the time that they were doomed. Doomed.
I thought it was good in that it brought everything together in one place, which was useful. But now you've got things like the PlayStation doing that.
And iPlayer does it as well. If you go to the BBC site, you see content from Channel 5 and ITV and Channel 4 there. So.
Well, I didn't know that you could do all that now. So anyway, bye-bye. another follow-up story. BT were asked to block Newsbin 2 by the courts, and they said okay, and now they've been given 14 days to do it. I think it was a little while back, because it's actually they've started putting this in place.
Yeah,
now.
So I think this story was towards the tail end of October, and I think the block came in on, it's either Wednesday or Thursday, I think the block came in officially.
Yep, so the court pretty much said that this court order says that you've got to block their current IP address as well as any potential future IP addresses, and also any site which predominantly or solely is for the intent and purpose of distributing access to Newsbin 2.
Yes.
Hmm.
But then,
I don't know who decides on what predominant means.
And that's what it becomes very...
Because they don't have to go back to court to do it. They just have. I don't know who and I don't know who decides on that, because again, if it's the entertainment industry, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm just checking on Torrent Freak just now. November 3rd, Newsbin said that that's us now being blocked. But I think they said 90. It's either 93 or 97% of the users. There we go.
It was 93%. I think it was.
93% have downloaded the anti-censorship software that Newsbin 2 released.
Yeah.
So
most users of Newsbin 2 have downloaded the client, which now should circumnavigate the block, is apparently doing so, and also is now encrypting their identities at the same time. So again, another layer of protection over the top. This shows that you can't really, it's hard to stop things like this. You know, there's always proxies.
And that was the problem. I guess by cutting off the easy option, they've now just almost forced it more underground, and they've made it even, yeah. You know, and 93, as we're saying, 93% of the user, you know, population are now using a different method that's probably untraceable and unblockable.
Yeah, well, certainly not blockable, but the same route as they were doing with their, I can't remember what the name of the blooming thing was called.
Was that, yeah.
Clearview or something?
Yeah.
Something like that.
But now you've got... So BT have now been asked to block the Pirate Bay. So this came out on Friday.
Right. So and why BT? BT must be thinking, oh, what the heck?
Because it's because of the biggest. So they're going after the biggest. Right. And what they're basically saying is if they can do legal action against the biggest one, everybody else will follow.
I wonder whether they will. We'll see. Because the judge did say, the BT should foot the bill as well.
Which I thought was a bit off.
Which translates to... the customers fit the bill
yeah.
For taking away the services. Anyway, It's still one of those really hard areas in that it's, you can see why people need to block these things. You need to see how it all comes about. But there's just something not right about the way it's being done.
No.
And it's hard to put your finger on exactly what and how you could get around it any other way.
And it's difficult because we're usually quite flippant about it. But if, I guess if we were filmmakers,
100%, this podcast would be very different.
Well, A, we wouldn't be doing a podcast.
That's true.
But
we'd probably be richer than we are now, though. Anyway.
I'm sure there's probably poor filmmakers.
In fact, yeah, it's probably filmmakers that are poor. Kindle, right, they've released a new feature that enables you to borrow books.
Yes.
This is in the US. I seem to remember hearing about this a while back.
Yeah, so basically, if you're a Prime user, you now have access to the Kindle lending library. So there's 5,000 titles available, and you can borrow maximum one book a month. There is no limit on keeping that book out, but the most you can take out is one book a month and one at a time. So 12 free books a year, basically. I guess the couple of issues with it, none of the major publishers have backed it.
No, of course not.
Because they see it as a...
You're giving away a book free?
Yeah. So
we don't let them do that with paperbacks.
No, and one of our older stories is all about how they were wanting to charge actual physical libraries. Every 25th copy, they would have to rebuy a digital copy. So you can see what their mindset is.
Yeah, it's not right.
So if you're a Prime member, you get this for free. And it also only works with Kindle devices. So Amazon are obviously seeing it as a differentiator between Kindle software on PC, Mac, or any of the Android or iOS devices compared to actually using Amazon's own physical hardware.
Yeah, I wonder, though, also whether that becomes part of the licensing deal, is that they can only do it on this Kindle device.
They can't have it everywhere.
I imagine it probably is.
But again,
hard to say.
It just means there's more differentiating Prime. You know, here in the UK, you get the free next-day shipping. America, it's free two-day shipping, but you get lots of video content free.
Yes, they've started tying into their streaming content. The US appear to love Prime far more than we've ever enjoyed it, basically.
I think, I know a few people that have it, and it just means that they buy everything from Amazon. And it becomes a no-brainer purchase.
Yeah, and it makes sense. If you're buying 10 things a year,
it's paid.
Why wouldn't you? Because it basically pays for your delivery costs and stuff.
Yep.
And you can share it with another person, I think, or maybe two other people. I don't know if that's still alive and kicking, but it used to be that you could say, you know, have a Prime member as well.
Yeah, the way I look at it is I always thought MobileMe was like the Apple tax. You know, every year they'll just take 50 quid off you. And I can see Amazon sitting there thinking, how can we do the same? You know, how can we encourage more people to almost give us that money every year? And what sweeteners do we have to offer in return?
Well, they haven't reached the tipping point here yet, but they clearly have in America.
Yes.
So what will they do for us? Give me free stuff. HP, they're on a reverse course.
They are. The PC division.
This HP is reversing away from the I guess the event horizon.
And HP irritate me because we use HP laptops at work. So that's
they mean work to you, do they?
And I've just got a new one, and what a piece of crud it is. Honestly, just some of the worst industrial design I've seen. Anyway.
Yes.
No, I've got that. Honestly, I could go at length. I need to stop myself. There's a little button at the top. I mean, there's no backlit keyboard. There's a little button you press and up pops a light. And it's just like, what?
Like a flash on her.
It's just bizarre. And anyway, nasty.
So, yes, but they're now, they're effectively saying, we're going to keep our PC business on. We're not going to chop off our biggest... revenue grower. Yes, I think that's all we need to say about that. Really.
WebOS is still seemingly getting chopped.
Yeah, but they are still trying to keep developers on board.
Yes.
So they're offering cheap tablets,
and they're also,
to try and keep people in.
Well, they're also doing a deal. If you buy a laptop, you also get a tablet for potentially 100 quid.
Right, so...
So they are trying to do something. But it looks like tablets will end up being Windows 8 tablets.
Which, from your experience,
Can't wait.
Yeah. Google Plus have updated some stuff.
Yeah, we've got a whole lot of Google stories now.
Yeah, yeah. For me, the interesting thing about the fact that Google Plus had released some stuff was the fact that I'd realized I hadn't been on Google Plus for many weeks.
Interesting.
As exciting as it was initially and how well received it was in the tech community, it's not on my daily trips anymore around the internet.
Mm. It still is for me.
Yeah. Do you still get quite a lot out of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Generally.
Maybe I should go back in it. But they've released a What's Hot feature. So just sort of a feed of posts that are getting a lot of, I guess, reposts and plus ones and stuff. Ripples, an ability to visualize how a story was shared.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah?
Yeah, you can, if you go into one of the popular stories, and it just kind of, you know, it's just one of these bubbles type, you know, windows then appears, and then you can click into that and see who shared it on from there, and it's very nicely done.
Okay. And Creative Kit, so ability to sort of add filters and, I guess, red eye reduction, things like that to your text, add text to your images. So kind of Picasso inside Google Plus.
Yeah.
I guess.
And I guess one of the big updates was that it's now finally working for Google App users. So if you're one of the paid, yes, Google customers, you can now actually use Google Plus.
Well, no, the Google apps, you don't have to be paid.
But you know what I mean.
I have got a Google. Yeah, yeah.
But generally, that was a bitch from most people. It's like, hold on, I am paying for this.
Yeah. So and yes, they have been slow, but they've kind of got there now. I've now got another Google Plus account.
Woo-hoo.
Not that I actually need one, but. Is now I don't know where to put anything anymore because I want to recreate all my circles and invite everyone into these new ones. I just don't know what to do anyway. But you can't have, you know, both thing, you know, I can't have my old account open in the same browser as the new account because it obviously all clashes with cookies and stuff.
Yes, so it does all. It also, I do feel a bit overloaded by the whole thing with like Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter. It just feels like they're all merging into a one, you know, like it's all much the same.
You almost need another one that just automatically posts out to all three of them.
Yeah.
Something like that.
There's an app for that.
Yeah, sure there is. Another interesting... When was the last time you used Bing?
Yesterday.
Really?
Because I downloaded the new Bing app on the iPhone.
Ah, okay. So I haven't been onto Bing for... Oh, it must be 6 months at least.
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't use it. I'm not using it at desktop. The image search... I used to use it a lot for image search, and especially for doing like the podcast.
But Google's caught up.
Yeah,
it's almost as good now.
And once Google had caught up, it was easier just to use Google. But the Bing app, just as you mentioned, it's actually quite smart.
But I think Bing as itself was a pretty smart search engine. Looked good, had some good features. Bing, there we go. Yes, beautiful. So yeah, that was just another interesting anecdote.
And it looks nice.
I can't see that really. It just looks like a fuzzy mobile phone. And it's not good for the users. Now it just looks like a bright fuzzy phone. Google TV. Now, this hasn't really been relevant for us up until now, but it is going to become relevant because they are bringing Google TV to the UK. And they have they've reworked their interface, and they've basically released Google TV 2. And it looks promising. It has to say, new interface, which is actually a proper 10-foot interface, so you can sit a long way away from it and still make sense and is worthwhile. They've brought apps and the Android marketplace, which is obviously quite important. And the idea is that it sits alongside your current subscription. And the idea, it just brings the internet into the searches. So their examples are, you know, you want to search for Boardwalk Empire as a series. You type in the TV search, it will bring up the Sky listings, it will bring up your Virgin listings, it will bring up YouTube listings and anything else, or maybe direct HBO listings as well. And you get to choose how you watch the shows. And it was fine up until all the entertainment industry crippled it.
Yes.
And I'm sure it'll happen again.
But I think the interesting thing for me was that this came out of nowhere. There was no, usually things like this get talked about and it's going to come, and then it comes, it's like, way, came out of nowhere. And also there was you'll know I love Plex, so I use Plex in my Mac Mini. A Plex update came out last week and really has taken a jump forward. And I'll keep that probably for the next podcast because it's a bit buggy. but they are doing some really nice things. But one of the things they did also bring out was a Google TV plugin. So you could potentially go and pick up a 100 quid client and slap in the Google slap in the Plex update, and then browse your Plex library that is being held on Mac, PC, or Linux elsewhere.
So, yeah, I mean, it's important just to say Google TV. It's basically a set top box. I mean, it's either a set top box that you buy as a separate box, or it just plugs in and it has an internet connection. And then, but it does some intelligent things about how it compiles them all in. I mean, it's kind of how Plex works anyway, isn't it? So
yeah.
It's sort of a no-brainer if they can feed into that. I mean, Google being Google, it has lots of, well, they are releasing APIs and stuff to enable you to tie into the content searches and stuff like that.
And having apps, I mean, one of the things about Apple TV was always the thought of if they release an app store and you could get your Angry Birds and your, almost like your, I mean, it's not console games, but that kind of, you know, Xbox Live Arcade or the PSN network type games.
And they've said that you can use your phone to
control,
you know, to use the as a controller on the TV.
Yes.
Okay, so you need to rage a bit now because someone's updated your beloved reader, and so you want to go and punch him in the face.
So that's that guy off of Big Brother. The what's his name?
Brian Dolan.
That's him. What a cock. The Google Reader update, which they talked about was coming, and it has come, and it's just really annoyed me, to be honest. I know probably.
So I went on to Google Reader, and you can explain what you're chuffing on about, because it still has the stories down the, you know, the feeds down the left hand side. You click on them, still brings up the stories on the right, and then when you go down the page, it ticks them as red.
But visually, I actually think it looks worse. There actually is less story content now, and maybe you actually, some people may argue and say it looks cleaner, there's more white space, but I just find it just feels very clunky to actually work in. They've removed the sharing options that I used to have. So you used to be able to share out your content really easily. Now you've got to share through Google Plus, and it's all like two clicks.
Did you ever do that though?
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to share, and I also used to follow. I used to follow lots of people, and I would have a following folder, which was other people sharing out their content. And I found a lot of content through that, and that's just overnight disappeared. And there was about 20, 30 people I followed in there, and that's just gone.
You sound a bit like the new, you know, when Facebook announces their new
I know. I know it is real first world stuff, and it's seen the grand scheme. It doesn't matter.
I have to agree. In some respects, you know, it looks now like all the other Google apps, and they've obviously been, a lot of work has gone into trying to make Google apps all look like desktop apps, or, you know, they certainly have a common look and feel, and it's brought it in line with that.
I agree
that it's certainly not as, it's not as straightforward to view as it was before. It's not as obvious as what you're doing. It just looks like a long page of text, when in fact before it looked like a whole page of stories. And like you say, you could see more stories previously than you can now.
Reminded me of Apple. Apple were, they're good at giving you, here's our view of the world, and you need to go with it. And this update felt a bit like Apple, in that here's all this functionality you had before, but see, because not many people were using it, we just switched it off. There's better ways of doing it, and here's how you're going to use this tool now. That's very un-Google-like, but I think it's maybe the new, more focused Google, and that, you know, we are going to focus on UI, we are going to have this consistent look and feel, we are going to cut out the, you know, the...
We're not going to concentrate on all this side stuff.
Yep. Yeah. You know, let's focus.
I wonder whether they'll ever stop having cars driving automatically around San Francisco, wherever it was. I think they should keep doing that. That's fun.
Mm.
Don't update Reader. Or in fact, put Reader back. I think, isn't there a campaign to bring back the old Reader?
If there is, then you're a cock if you sign up to that as well. Just move on. But I think
you should just have a podcast and rage about it.
But the other thing that's quite sneaky, not quite sneaky, but I mean, Reader came along and it's killed off the competition. There's not many other websites that does, you know, Google Reader type functionality. We used to have blog lines and it got killed. And I guess this shows the kind of, is this Google being more of a monopoly? I mean, the other thing they've done it on is the Google Maps, you know, so they released the API years ago. Lots of people using it. And I think they're now saying, is it 25, if you get more than 25,000 calls a year via the API, you now need to start paying for it.
No, I didn't know that. Yeah.
You know, so it's that little switch of, and is that the monopoly power coming in? You know, it's the dominant player, and now we're going to start charging. But
Or maybe it's just them focusing on needing to be a business rather than
I think it's
search business.
I think it's more the latter. You know, they need to knuckle down, they need to deliver. And they have given away a tremendous amount for free. And I know there's always that argument they're giving it away for free because it's all advertise-based. And you're giving over your information. But
the links are getting looser and looser and looser and looser, yeah. I think. And effectively, okay, it is all down to collection of data. But I think they also realise that that comes with a lot of responsibility, which they've been bitten about quite a lot. So maybe now they're just saying, well, we've got these great products and let's monetize them. Let's actually get some money out of them.
Yes.
Because people are... The maps... You cannot beat that maps. You know, the fact that you can use its API and call in all those things. So it's only reasonable that businesses who use it extensively for making their own money, you know, should pay for that service. And it's probably only fair to competitors as well, because it's not fair that someone just gives away all this stuff for free and, like you say, knocks out the competitors without
absolutely
and without thought, or, you know, it does just cripple some markets.
And when you think about what they're providing, you know, via maps. The amount of data, the amount of functionality is amazing. I still think it amazes me. Every time I go and use maps, it's just great.
Yep, it's incredible.
Well, one really odd thing, and I don't know if you're just going to mention it or not, but they released a Gmail app for iOS this week, and within 2 hours pulled it.
Yeah, no, I see that.
this is bizarre.
Because it had bugs in it or something.
Well, they made a big thing that, I mean, it's basically a wrapper around their web app. And the big,
have you seen their web app? I think it's incredible.
Their web app's amazing. And I mean, the updates to it this week, I mean, the new look and feel, I'd switched to the preview look and feel. So the look and feel feels fine for me. But I just think functionality-wise, you know, it's got a lot of things in it that you know, the desktop clients don't have. It's really, really good.
But this, I love the way when you select different messages and it sort of stacks them all up, higgledy-piggledy, yep, as you're going up. It's just incredible what you can actually do in a web page.
No, absolutely. But at least this, and it was a big fuss made, we're going to, you know, somebody leaked it and then the next day it comes out, there was an iOS Gmail app. Woo. But it's a wrapper on a web app. You can do attachments differently, and notifications was there. So that was the kind of main difference. You got notifications. But that was a bit that was broke. So they quickly pulled it. But the odd thing was it only supports one Gmail account. And I think most people are going to have at least one, if not more.
Do you know what? It's another one of these steps where, you know, I was talking about the fact that you can only have one account open in any one browser now. I think they're desperately trying to get everyone to pull together into one account. They want that single unity. And it's because in the past, because of all these things they brought together in the past, everyone has three or four, but yep, they don't want that anymore. They want that single identity, and
it's a bit
this
like
is the
real...
only way they can get it done, because it will force people to do it.
Yeah, and it's a bit like the real identity on Google Plus, which still rankles a lot of people, that they can't be, you know, they can't be Sweeper. They've got to be a real name.
It's all tied together. I think they want everyone onto that Google Plus identity, and then all the services would feed from that. And I think that's how they're getting, you know, why we're seeing all these things being pulled together.
Yes.
And why you can only have one account, because why would you need any more when you've only got one identity?
But the good thing is at least Google's now figured out a way to get around the iOS limitation of 100 beta testers. Just release an app, get hundreds of thousands of people downloading it, and then pull it an hour later.
Oh, that's where the bug is. Yeah. Yes. Facebook stats we've been delivered.
Yes. Sorry, this is quite stat heavy for a...
That's all right, because they're just interesting.
So they're bringing out this thing called Trusted Friends. And yeah, the way I think Trusted Friends works, if I lose my password, yep, I'll have some trusted friends that can get me back into Facebook.
Because obviously you can't use the password recovery thing.
No. Clearly not.
That would be impossible.
Yeah.
So you have to ask a friend, and that friend can then go and let you back into your account, apparently.
But the main stat was every day only 0.06% of Facebook's logins are compromised. And you sit there and think, you know, that's pretty good. That's quite low.
Yeah, that's a tiny number, isn't it?
But that works out as 600,000 logins per day are compromised.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. Every day.
I wonder what they comprise of compromised, but hard to say.
Yes. But spam wise, they say less than 4% of the content shared on Facebook is spam. I don't know
I
how
can't
they measure spam.
That. Exactly. How do you identify spam?
I don't know how to measure that. I remember your very, very, very frequent mafia war postings.
Yeah, that's all stopped. But yes, so that wouldn't be considered spam, probably, would it?
No, that's what I mean. But I thought it was spam every time it popped up.
I think they have got better and hotter on this. There have been times when, you know, we've had things taken away from Facebook because as soon as you get a few negative things come back from users saying, I don't like this in my stream, they're now hotter on pulling it down, which is bad news for developers, but probably quite good news for users.
And what they were trying to do was against email spam, and I get a lot of email spam, and they're saying that 89.1% of email is spam, which is
it's ridiculous. I mean, if you look at the amount of traffic that gets done by email, it's unbelievable how much is taken up by spam. I mean, but email clients are getting very, very good and have got very good at just filtering out. I cannot believe it's a profitable business to be in anymore. No. But it must be. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it.
Exactly. So people are still...
Because it probably only takes one person out of 100, 200,000, 500,000 and they've made more money than it costs to actually chuck out that much junk. It's so annoying.
One of the guys I work with, you know, so he's working in IT, so he'd be fairly switched on, but he got an almost perfect receipt from Apple. And he says he'd bought this game, which he'd never bought. Click here to check your account. And it was just like, I've never bought that. Why does that cost $10? Click, logged in. Oh, it's not there. And then he phoned me.
And now he's giving away his username and password.
He phoned me because it's an Apple thing. It's obviously Ian's fault. And that usual way, it's like, it's all me. And and as he was telling me, I says, you do know they wouldn't have emailed you that. You'll get a receipt, but they wouldn't have put in about the, is this a proper purchase and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, I said, I think you're going to go and change your password right now.
Yes.
I says, do you use a common password? I've got one of three that I use. I says, well,
you better
go
and change in other places as well,
Cha-ching. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is easy to fall for it. You know, I think probably we all have... unknowingly at one point or other, you know, whether it be a cheap sale somewhere, you know, I think I can't remember what it was now. They were selling some game off cheap somewhere and a lot of us fell for trying to buy it. Thought, no, that's not genuine. Too late. I had to cancel cards and stuff like that. So it's just, you know.
Yes. And there's a few other stats there as well, but to be honest, they're quite dull.
All right. As long as you're happy, they're not going to itch away at you there. No.
I've got
5% this, anyone?
I've got the stats. 0.06%. Got the stats out of my
system. Let's get on to games then.
Is it any reason I bought a Fitbit? You know what I mean?
Ooh, graphs. Batman got released, was it last week? Can't remember anyway. Arkham City, and I have it, and I have played it quite to death, actually. Really enjoyed it. Another epic game, very sandbox. There are lots of different aspects of the game, and you can choose which bits you do when, effectively. And just to give you an idea, completing the main storyline all the way through probably completes you under 50% of the actual whole game. And quite a powerful storyline it is. The ending of the story is very powerful.
No spoilers.
No spoilers at all. No, it's good. And I'm still playing because there's lots of challenges and things to find and search out, and it's all done in a very clever way. They're all side missions, effectively, and they all have their own completion stats. So it just makes you want to go around and complete it. So it's all very good, and I've enjoyed it. The only downside was that they've got some sort of flaky game save, and it's an automated save thing. But if it does get interrupted for whatever reason... then that's the end of your game save. It's gone. You cannot get it back. Yes. And it happened to me at 25%. Because I think it does a game save just after you die, effectively. So it's quite common that you die during the game. And if you're particularly cheesed off about that fact and you happen to turn off your console, then that's it. That's the end of that game and the rest of that one. Yeah, so I had to start again from about 25%, which was a bit annoying. But, you know, I've been very careful since then to make sure that everything has stopped doing whatever it was doing. And I also make backups onto like a little memory card every now and again. But you shouldn't have to do that with console games.
I was going to say, don't you love console gaming?
Yeah, it's a bad state of affairs. And they had some problems with some of the downloaded content also corrupted the game and actually meant the game wouldn't start, which was frustrating for a lot of people. they've said they're going to release patches, and as long as you're careful, you know, you're okay. But that's a big downside as far as I'm concerned, and it was frustrating at the time, but it's still an amazing game.
Good, because I'm going to get that at Christmas.
Yep, it's and as soon as they release these patches, I think, you know, and make it more solid. Just be careful of that game save. That's all I'd be recommending you on. So it's definitely a good Christmas game. We've seen Battlefield released now. You have Battlefield. I don't at the moment.
Yes. So I didn't get it on day of release. I got it a few days later. I think it was a week later, and I went to install it, and my Xbox broke.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I was a bit cheesed off at that, to be honest.
So did you go and buy the new style Battlefield 3 one?
No.
Have you got a black one?
Yeah.
Hey,
but nice. I was really, really hacked off because I ejected the disc. And as I ejected it, I heard a kind of clunk. I was like, oh, what was that? Oh, never mind. Put the Battlefield disc in and it started reading. I thought, that sounded really loud. And then all of a sudden, all I heard was, and I was like, ooh.
That clunk was more serious.
Yeah. And then, of course, it says, cannot read disk. And I thought, oh, maybe it's just a bad disk. So I pressed the eject button, and I've never heard such a long scraping noise as I did when I ejected the CD and the DVD. It was like this. I was like, oh. Now, me being me, I thought, I wonder if it is Battlefield. So I stuck Forza in. And it did exactly the same. But it wasn't scratching the discs.
I was going to say, did you check that it wasn't scratching the disc before?
I did.
Only sensible.
So to play Battlefield actually cost me £200 because I had to go and buy a new Xbox.
Still, you got a nice shiny black thing under your TV.
I've got a black thing. It is quieter. Do you know what really hacked me off? I know this is turning out quite a negative podcast. I got the blooming, I paid my £15 to do my hard drive transfer nonsense. It says 18 gig to transfer. I was like, why only 18 gig? It doesn't transfer any of the actual games you install. So you have to reinstall all the games. And it's like,
right,
that is, oh, so annoying.
Yes, you want that automated process, but it won't let you do that.
Now, Battlefield, just again, very PC-like in that you install it, this one, you install this two, then when you start the game, you install the high-def texture pack.
Right.
Because they can't assume you've got a hard drive.
Right. Yes.
So once
you know what this is? This is because with three generations down the line of games on a, you know, a next-gen console that's now 6 years old or however old it is.
Yeah. But also
amazing that they're still being able to get away with what they can.
I think it's also taking them in. I mean, the patch came, I think it was 200 meg patch.
Right.
And you're just like, come on. I mean, the FIFA ones at least are only 4 meg and 5 meg.
Yeah.
But I must admit that, and I've not tried single player. Single player in Battlefield got, you know, not so hot reviews. You know, they said it was okay. But I think that's compared to Call of Duty, which has been pretty stellar for most people. But the multiplayer was awesome. Absolutely awesome. Oh, pardon me, as he riffs with excitement. A rift of excitement. The bit that got me, and I've always liked Battlefield, even if I go back to years ago PC and Battlefield 1942 and all that kind of good stuff. The bit that got me was I'm in a hut and I'm shooting away at people, and then somebody would take a rocket launcher and just blow the hut up. Yeah. Or a grenade would blow up next to it and it would take the wall away. And you just felt, you had that like nowhere is safe feeling, but the environment was so dynamic. I loved it. First few games I was getting totally schooled, and then I started, and you need to bear in mind you're a week behind, so people have got much better weapons. You're going to have a painful introduction.
As I said, with all these new games, it's always about upgrade, which gives the best players the best stuff. It's a little bit demoralizing when you first start.
But I loved it. You know, it was great.
I have to say, the demo, I did actually end up playing the demo, and first time I played, I turned it off in disgust because I literally spawned, I died. And just after a little while of that, you think, to start with, you think, oh, it's just a bit of fun. And then eventually you think, no, that's just annoying. And then it gets you after it. But I did go back to it. And the second time, took my time, a little bit of Heidi Seeky. And yeah, you eventually start seeing its benefits. But whether that demo killed off my want to buy it, I'm not sure. But I think it was close to.
Well, I think I And I know Call of Duty's out this week, you know, so it's probably a big week for games.
Yeah.
And then there's Halo not so long after it, which is another title that we love.
And so Uncharted 3 on PS3 has been getting 10 3, out of 10.
So it's a... But it's Uncharted 3 is a great Christmas game.
Another Christmas game.
Or it's a birthday game. So the I do think Battlefield is worth considering.
Yeah.
Try to convince you. I might have to buy you to get you online.
No, I'm tempted enough with it, but I'm also tempted by Modern Warfare 3, and I think
I saw Tesco. Tesco were doing Modern Warfare 3 for £25 if you paid for a year's Xbox Live subscription, which we all have to pay for anyway. So
and you can add it onto your existing subscription.
Yeah, so I thought that was quite a good deal. Because there's not been many deals this year on games.
Indeed. So that's the kind of games news.
GTA 5.
GTA, yes. Yeah. GTA 5.
I looked at the trailer and thought, yep, I'll buy that and probably play it for 3 days.
I actually ended up playing GT 4 quite a lot, and just for the single player. The multiplayer didn't really grab me that much. We did a bit, didn't we?
Yeah.
When it was new, but it just got a bit tired of after a while. But I even went back to the four to try and complete it, but I never did get to the end. Never did get through the story.
Bless.
Like I got to get into a bit that was hard to get through, and it frustrated me, so I just stopped playing it. There you go. But yeah, so I will play it, I'm sure. And then get back to San Andreas.
Yeah.
Good move or not, I don't really know, because I didn't play the original.
I did play the original, and San Andreas annoyed me because that was the one where you had to start, like, you had to get a, you know, you had to chat up women, and you had to go to the gym, and you had to eat. Or else, and it just all felt...
All the mundane stuff that you don't really want to have to concentrate on.
It was like Tamagotchi, you know, looking after a pet. That's what it felt like to me. And I just, that annoyed me more than anything else. But some of the missions were great. There's some classics in there. So, and it was also because there was the soundtrack was amazing. A whole lot of, you know, that kind of rap music side that hasn't been exposed in any other games. It was just great. Loved it.
You're almost guaranteed it's going to be AAA. It's going to be an amazing game. It's going to be technologically amazing. They'll have stepped it up somewhere along the way, and it will cause controversy. So what's not to like? So might as well get to the end of this podcast. I'm even going to miss out my barrel rolling. So let's just go on to the picks. Henry's not here, but he did put in a pick. And as he's not here, I'm going to nick it.
Shame on you.
Shame on me.
Shame on you.
And that pick is Jetpack Joyride for iPad. I don't know if it's on iPhone.
It's on iPhone as well.
Okay, so for both. And it's another one of these dead simple concept games where effectively it's press the screen to make your character jump or fly or do a number of other different things. But effectively it's just a one button game, side scroller. And the idea is to survive as long as you can. And it gets faster and faster as you go. Effectively, you've got this little jetpack and you collect coins and avoid enemies. And it just gets incredibly insane and intense towards the end of your levels. But you buy perks and stuff, so eventually you get to buy stuff that helps you survive a bit longer. And you get little vehicles to use along the way, which is sort of a bit like growing your Super Mario character, where you get an extra chance to die without actually ending your go. Pretty amazing. I can't remember what the price was. This is the downsides of nicking someone. I can't remember what I paid. I've enjoyed it, although I haven't gone back to it as much as I thought.
I'm sure it was one of these 59p or 119.
Yeah, it was. It wouldn't have been more than that, because then I wouldn't have paid for it. So.
When I guess I played it until I completed it, and then I was
you
like,
"You completed it?
Yeah.
What? Where did you find the time? Anyway."
To be honest, I just saw your pitiful excuses for high scores, and I thought I need to take them on.
Yeah, they weren't hard to beat. Because again, Apple, I'd say I played it for a bit, and that's it.
Apple done a deal, and I don't know if this was them starting to think about doing some of the things that Amazon are doing, but basically it was free if you liked Apple on the Facebook page and clicked on a link from there, you got for free.
Right, so they're trying to do some different stuff.
Yeah.
And Little Tower, or whatever it's called, is now my latest thing, which seems to suck the battery dry of my iPad. Little Tower?
No. Like I'm on my way to buy it right now.
No, I wouldn't. Well, it's free, so you'd have to buy it, so it's fine. But it's just now starting to annoy me because it constantly sends me notifications that I need to restock floors. Anyway, you'll see.
Little Tower?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I've done a search and it doesn't appear.
I can't remember them. I'll do all a search while you tell me about your pick.
My pick is I Done This, which is a very simple...
sounds like a little kid who's done something wrong.
I Done This.
left a little present.
I've Done This. Basically, you sign up to idonethis.com and you put in your email address, and each night they will email you around about 7 o'clock, so mine's is probably coming in any minute now. You reply to the email and you just write down what you've done that day, and it stores it in a calendar. You can go to the website and then have a review of what you've been doing, and you can subscribe to that calendar so you can see it in Outlook or iCal or Google Calendar. And it's just a nice way of keeping track on what you've actually been doing, which my boss asked me to do a few weeks ago, which was slightly worrying.
Yeah, how to make you feel a little bit uncomfortable.
I think you need to start keeping a record of what you do. Yeah. He did point out that was to try and help me.
Yes, Ian. Really uncomfortable.
That's what I thought. And I know a couple of folk that I do work with, they do much the same. They almost keep a work diary. Everything gets logged in just an Excel sheet. It just means if somebody comes back and said, either do you remember this or what about that, they can do a quick search and pull it out. Some people like to work and they're very thorough and organised, and that's one way of doing it.
Yeah, it has to say though, all things like that, and I don't know whether this makes you feel like it, but it just makes you feel like you have to justify every second of your day.
No, and I don't. I've not been using it for that. It's actually quite a nice way. It's almost like the inverse to-do. The to-do, when you do it, disappears. And you're actually saying, oh, I've done all that today.
Nice. I bet it comes out with some nice graphs for you as well, eh?
No, there's no graphs. Exactly.
We need to get onto Toggle then, because Toggle gives you nice graphs, pie charts, and bar graphs.
Oh. That's it. That's my pick.
There you go. idonethis.com.
Toggle? Toggle.com? No.
TOGGL.
Oh.
Anyhow, that is the end of our podcast. While Ian goes and looks at some graphs, you can find out more about us at digitaloutbox.com. We are on email, info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. You can follow me on Twitter if you like, Cheesy UK, and you can follow Ian at
Toggle costs money.
No, you get a free account.
You don't.
There is a free account.
One user, $5 a
Ian's
month.
Ian's on... promise you. Well, maybe they've upgraded it. I don't know.
Okay. Ian's on Twitter. Ian.net is a website. Sweeper is the Twitter account.
Classy. The best podcast around we are.
98 episodes in. We still fluff it up like nobody's business.
Anyway, that's the end of the podcast. And we will talk at you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Right, we're late.
Yeah, well, it is FIFA, so you won't play FIFA because you've not got it.
No, but it means I can go and get some tea.
Ah, bless. My I Done This today. Email's just Copton. Copton?
So it's Toggle of charging now, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Huh. Mm. Mm.